Owners of a direct care practice are more likely to experience higher job satisfaction than the insurance-based practice, and it's no wonder why. Direct care is independent of insurance. Patients pay the doctor directly for their expertise. The doctor gets full autonomy in how they care for patients and how they get paid. We've chosen this path for the love of medicine. This is the direct care way. By listening to this podcast, you may even start to believe that you too can have a successful direct care practice. Come listen with an open mind as I share my personal journey on how I pivoted from an insurance-based practice to direct care right in the middle of the pandemic and the valuable lessons along the way. This podcast may be the very thing you need to revitalize your medical practice. I'm your host, owner of a direct care podiatry practice, Dr. T. Nguyen. Hey there. Today's episode, another special one. I'm really enjoying having conversations with other direct care doctors to share with you so you can see what the transition into direct care could look like. A lot of us have parallel paths. Some of us might have been employed or we are self-employed and went from insurance and into direct care. So I hope that by sharing all of these conversations with you, it gives you an idea of what's really possible for you, and then you get to decide how you write your story. Today I'm sharing with you a conversation I had with Dr. Melody Strouder. She is a podiatrist who practices in Philadelphia. Her website is onthemovedoc.com, and initially she had thought about having a mobile podiatry clinic that was quickly halted. And you'll hear how that all played out. And now she has a private practice that she runs by herself, and she is also a mother of two small children. And I think you'll start to see that direct care offers you life and job satisfaction with the flexibility of us deciding who we get to see, how much we charge, and how many patients we want to see in a day, all to benefit patient care. So tune into this conversation, and I hope you can grab a couple of few gems as you are along your journey in the direct care way. So happy to connect with you, Dr. Strouder. Dr. Strouder has been on my radar. I'm kind of peeking around and seeing who is next to jump onto the direct care bandwagon, and I'm so excited to be able to connect with you for you to share really what your journey has been like from the insurance-based practice into your current practice. And certainly I'm here to network with you and offer you any insight I might have that might be relevant to your practice. So can you give us a little background about why you became a direct care practice and what prompted you to be where you are now?
Yeah, and I thank you for the intro. I'm happy to be here. Yeah, so I worked for a very large supergroup for about 5 years. And I've always been the type of doctor I don't always like to do the mainstream treatment. I like to do things outside of the box. And it bothered me that I feel like I could only treat people with what insurance would cover. And sometimes that wasn't always the best treatment. And I felt like I was limiting myself. I was preventing myself from expanding and growing. So there were resources I asked permission to have at the office, and I was told no, which I understand, because in an insurance model, if they don't think it's going to bring in profit, then they don't want to expend the money, you know, for you to have that. So I just got to the point where I felt like I was, it's a strange analogy, but I felt like I was this fish in a little fishbowl and I couldn't grow anymore and I wanted a bigger fish tank. So I just thought I need to leave, and I didn't care if it meant less money, more money. I just needed to feel peace and be happy with what I do. And I was getting very burnt out with insurance. It was constant every day trying to reason or write an appeal letter or explain why I thought this was necessary for someone, you know, someone who's had half their foot amputated, getting denied for custom diabetic inserts, things like that just didn't make sense. So I left. I was 9 months pregnant, and I put in my resignation and went on maternity leave and said, I'm going to do this on my maternity leave, which, looking back on it, was, I don't regret it, but it wasn't the most simple path. Yeah, it worked out.
It's funny how pregnancy can do that to you, huh? It changes you a little.
Yeah, it just makes you realize you don't want to waste time, and you want to live each moment best ability that you can. So I went back and forth on maternity leave. At this point, I still didn't know if I wanted to take insurance or not. And it was just such an internal struggle for me, because I cared about my patients from the last practice, and I wanted them to be able to feel like they could follow me. So, and I didn't want to upset them either. So I felt terrible about it, but I talked to some other peers in the direct care realm And honestly, like listening to your post, you were a big motivator because reading things that you've posted and that other women had posted on Face, even just Facebook, made me realize that's possible and there's no reason why I can't do it. So someone else said to me, if you're going to start off fresh, you should just completely opt out. Just start off new, go down a whole nother path. And I thought about it and it just felt right, so I just went with it and I don't regret it at all. It was bumpy in the beginning, but things are really panning out now, and so I do really think it was a good choice.
Well, thank you for validating my podcast. Because, these are monologues most of the time. I'm talking about my personal journey. I don't know who's listening. People don't always reach out. I know they're reading, because they'll send me a message here and there, but they'll never comment on my stuff. They'll never post. A lot of people are kind of just lurking. But to be able to hear it from a real person who's actually doing direct care, it's really meaningful to know that this is a viable path for other people. So I wanted to know, well, I don't know if you know, but I started my private practice when I was pregnant too, because I was employed. And same thing, I said I wanted to do a very specific thing. And they said, tough luck, we own you, basically. So whatever's on your schedule, you are obligated to do if you want to get a paycheck. And that felt very restrictive. I really hated that. And it was a fight between getting a comfortable check every 2 weeks versus truly having desire to create something and make my life a little bit more meaningful and doing work that matters to me. And there was a cost to that. There was a cost of peace. We took risk to doing something that we, have a calling for. It was not a written path. There is no book, but I'm on the same page that I'm happy that I'm doing what I'm doing. Every day is a different day. And I'm glad to be able to meet people like you because this is not easy. I've never said that a direct care practice is easy. It's simple. It's way more simple than being insurance bound and having to sign all those contracts, but that's not necessarily easy. We have to get through some of the mind drama of really believing in ourselves, the fear of failure, the fear of success to actually get to where we are. So can you tell me how far in your practice are you now?
I opened up in April of last year, so coming up on a year soon. So yeah, it's flying by.
And how is it going? You were saying you were getting busier and
It's been rewarding every step of the way. It's just in the beginning, it was a little bit felt more risky because we're in the type of career where we built this path for so long. We invested all this time and money into our education, and then we're taking this huge leap and doing something completely against the way that we're taught. So it was scary in the beginning, but it was always rewarding. There was never a day where I came home and thought, I shouldn't have done this because I just felt more fulfilled. So I think you go into it just expecting, the first year, don't expect to bring in a lot of profit. If anything, just keep an eye on your numbers each month and see if you can steadily see the amount of new patients coming in and increasing and your revenue slowly increasing. At least you know you're getting somewhere, but it might just take a while. So this month, I would say this past January, I did notice all of a sudden things just kicked off. I don't know how to explain it. We were slow January, and then just sorry, we were slow in December, and then all of a sudden in January, our phones started ringing more, and I started to hear a lot of people saying word of mouth things like, "Oh, my family member, my friend, my aunt," and that's how I knew. It just took time for word to spread, even though I'd been doing advertising. I truly do think word of mouth is. One of the best ways. So,
I was going to ask you, how are you marketing your practice?
I am in an area where there's a lot of people who don't have insurance. So, because of that we have a great relationship. I love natural medicine. They love natural medicine. They don't take insurance. They don't have insurance. So, we've established a great relationship from the beginning, and I did that just by advertising in their newspapers. I've done local regular newspapers, but I've also done a couple local magazines. Like we have some elderly magazines that go out. So like a couple things like neighborhood magazines. I one company does a Facebook ad for me once a month. I mean, and so social media wise, I'm definitely lacking. That's the part I'm trying to work on, but it's definitely not anywhere near where it should be.
So, do you think your biggest return has been word of mouth?
Yeah, definitely.
And where are you at?
I'm in Shippensburg, Pennsylvania. It's an hour south of Harrisburg, so I'm kind of right near the Maryland border. So I did actually have my Maryland and my Pennsylvania license for a while because I practiced in both states.
You had mentioned that you started off with the idea of doing a mobile practice, but it didn't pan out. Is that right? What were some of the limitations with that?
We bought a shuttle bus because when they retire shuttle buses, they still function. They just have more mileage on them. And so we got a good deal on it. And my husband's great at building things and renovating stuff. So we started renovating it. And then one day the engine just wouldn't start. And we looked for mechanics in the area. In our area, there aren't shuttle buses. So there was no one that wanted to work on it. So then we realized, oh wow, in the future, if this just randomly happens, are we digging a hole right now? So at that point, I think it was within the same week, we had a friend text us and say, hey, I found this property in your area. It's been on the market for a while now. It's a cute office. You should go look at it. And it was like meant to be. We loved it. So then we just drove the shuttle bus to the scrapyard that day and just moved on. It was a great idea and I was really excited about it, but it wasn't meant to be. I think it would have gotten very complicated. And you would, if you think about it, we deal with a lot of products and, durable medical equipment, all kinds of stuff, and I don't know where I would have put it all.
Well, that's good feedback. I love the idea. I don't do like I don't have a mobile van. I do home visits, and I'm offering visits to other medical offices. But yeah, there is a little bit of, I guess, maybe savviness when it comes to having a shuttle bus that I have no idea on how to do, but I see it all the time. And I'm reminded of when we were in grade school, the bookmobile, like it was so exciting to have them come to our school. So it's very nostalgic for me to see mobile clinics on the go.
I love the idea. And I was so serious. I had even started getting my CDL. Like, I had already had my CDL permit and everything. And I was determined I was going to drive this bus. But it wasn't, and it just wasn't meant to be.
Well, that's great. So, what has surprised you about direct care now that you're in it?
One thing that stood out to me the most is I came out of residency so surgically hungry. I wanted to get my numbers, I wanted to get board certified, and they just instill this hunger in you to want to do surgery, which is great in a way, but sometimes it's not. And I feel like I did so many surgeries, and some people were chronically ill to the point where they just struggled with healing. And some people that are in those situations, surgery isn't always the best answer right away. So now that I don't take insurance, I have more natural healing types of modalities like my laser and my shockwave. And from using different types of treatments, I've seen people heal more than I ever have without surgery. So now, before I used to do a lot more tendon repairs, ligament repairs, things like that. Now the only surgeries I really do are bunions, because obviously bunions aren't going to get better with a laser or shockwave. But the only other surgeries I do besides that kind of stuff is trauma, so like bad fractures or things like coalitions that just kids need to be removed. So I'm really avoiding a lot of that other stuff that I used to see. So it's the shift has been amazing. Like I enjoy that, makes me happy. Because it just seems like people heal and recover better now. I don't know if you've experienced that.
Yeah, everything you're saying is exactly where I was in the shift because yeah, I really like how you said surgically hungry. Like you go out thinking you're just gonna meet everybody and everyone's gonna be on the books and then, that's how life was going to be. There was a reality check that most people don't want surgery, regardless of it being a good outcome or not. They are just not in the mindset to say that's what I want. Unless you're doing trauma, right? Unless you got a bone sticking out of your skin, of course, you want to fix it. But the majority of people in my community as well wanted to avoid surgery. And if anything, they were going to Google to find natural treatments. So I thought, what better way to serve my community than to provide them with evidence-based practices that can get them better without surgery? And so I have both elements available. I still do surgery. I offer everything that I was trained to do, but I am predominantly doing more of the education, pain management modality, minimally invasive surgery, and foot fillers in my practice because I just had to learn to listen to my community to see what they needed because I have limited resources. And I've said this in the past, we were trained to see everybody that comes in. But when you're in private practice, that is not a really good business model because if you bring everything in and
perhaps you don't do some of those things well. Just because you made some revenue doesn't mean that was the right decision. And so I think I'm just learning to sort out what is appropriate for an academic institution versus private practice. And so being able to freely choose what we want to do and what we want to pay is really empowering. And
Yeah.
so that's kind of where I started to develop my practice.
And when you said listen to the people, it is so true. If you could listen to the people and they could list the things that they do want, I think it would be they want more time with the physician because they want the physician to hear them out, which we're able to do in direct care. They want options to avoid surgery, which now we can offer when we do more direct care. And then if they do need surgery, which if like bunions and hammer toes, you can do minimally invasive in the office. So that's a lot of people do want to avoid going in a hospital setting and going under anesthesia. So it seems like we can just address the things that people want. We're able to do them in a better fashion now, I think.
I agree. Have you been confronted with any misconceptions about your practice?
When we first opened it seemed like the first couple months, we did get a lot of phone calls where people seemed to be frustrated when we explained we didn't take insurance. One woman even said, "How do you expect me to pay for my groceries if you don't take my insurance?" And she hung up the phone. And I had empathy for her because it sounds like it's hard for her to make her bills. And, growing up, like my family didn't have much money, so I can sympathize. But at the end of the day, there are podiatrists 15 minutes from me, 30 minutes north. There are other people that take insurance. So at the end of the day, she can go somewhere else. But what I was offering was an appointment the next day, and I was offering treatment options that she wouldn't get at other places. So I just said, well, you can, if you're able to, I would just call another office, and then that way, hopefully you don't have any medical bills and they cover your treatment. But she was very unhappy. So I'll never forget that conversation because it did upset me and it didn't make me regret it, but it did kind of, you have that moment where you're like, oh no, is this a bad idea to, is it, this is, I don't want to upset people. I'm a people pleaser and I want to make people happy. So that was a tough, those conversations were a little tough for me, but they get easier and easier. The more times you have them, it seemed like my spiel in the beginning was one thing. And then by the end of the year, it was completely transformed into this amazing, elegant conversation where by the end, people completely understood and they said, oh, I get it. I appreciate that. So you just get better at it as time goes on. It really does change. Have you
So
experienced that?
let me tell you, okay, so I don't have staff today. Today is a Monday, and I took the day off, but I had a bunch of voicemails. And so I called everybody back, and 100% of them didn't want to book because they were not pre-screened. So they were either referred by somebody who didn't pre-educate them that I was a cash practice or whatever the circumstances were. And so I'm still having those conversations. And it doesn't bother me as much as it takes up a lot of my time because I have people who do want to pay. And so I'm having to spend less time being upset and annoyed. Rather, I'm trying to spend time on people who really need my service. And so, yeah, you're right. They're in the beginning when you don't have experience with rejection, you're just dealing with it and you're like, is this the right thing to do? But you really have to stand firm in your beliefs that you know that you're doing the right thing. And some people are just not fit for your practice. Just like you shouldn't be seeing emergency cases in your office when they're better served at the emergency room, for example, right? There are just some things that we can't do and that we have to learn to accept as just part of our practice because at the end of the day, we want a business that works for us, not for us to be in our business all the time, drowning in CPT codes, ICD-10 codes, trying to figure out the billing stuff, taking charting home and those things. So I still get patients who call upset. Many of them will say things like, well, I'm on a limited budget, or I can't believe you don't take insurance, or I'm sorry you don't take insurance. And then this one lady today said, she asked me, so why don't you take insurance? That's unfortunate. And I said, I can't survive on insurance financially. So there's no way they would never pay me enough to survive. And so she only like really understood her anger that I didn't take insurance. But I sat firm in that I couldn't survive. In my first year and a half in private practice, I was drowning in debt and I had no idea how to pay it off because I had to pay for my overhead. So I wanted to ask you, going through the hardships that you did in your first year, what would you have said to the younger version of yourself about this practice? This direct care practice that you have.
The first thing that popped in my head was trust your instincts, because I have learned that if you follow that voice that just pops up in your head, it usually does take you to a good place. You just have to actually listen to it. and drown out the chaos that can overwhelm that. So I think, yeah, just trust your instincts and stay firm with your beliefs, and you'll just continue to progress and move forward with the practice. So, and I've only, I mean, I haven't even been a year in, so it's hard for me to say that, but you've been further along. So I think it would be a better question for you. Because you're
Yeah,
five
I
years,
think
how many years in?
no, actually, I started my practice in 2018 and I pivoted
Oh,
in
okay.
2020. So I'm about 2 years of, I was a hybrid and then I was fully cash last year.
Oh, okay.
So it was a transition, and that's something that I highly recommend whoever's in insurance space to consider, just dropping out one insurance at a time just to experience it, to know how to have those conversations and then eventually be comfortable with your decision. Yeah, so that was my story. But I think I had to go back and speak to the younger version of myself. I would say that there will be a lot of hard time. And sometimes the right thing to do is the hard thing to do. Because if I sat and was complacent and just said, I want that easy cush job and a check every 2 weeks, I don't think I would have lasted in medicine as long as I want to, because I was not just burned out, but I felt very exploited, you know, our goodwill of wanting to help people get better at any cost. You know, oftentimes we're doing things for free. We never ask for money. And that is just not sustainable for me or my family. So I think realizing what's up ahead, it's not easy, but we can figure stuff out. We made it this far through medical school and training that this is just the next phase in our career. And I also learned that no matter what an individual's income level is, there will always be these types of struggles. It just looks a little bit different each income level as you go. So, you know, we went from residency, which was we were getting paid with 50 grand or something. And then you move into private practice and you get a cush salary, and then you're moving up in a different income level. You're going to have similar problems. It just looks a little differently. So I don't think we ever get away from the fear of self-doubt or even the fear of success. Many of us are afraid of having success to the point where it takes us away from the things that we want to have in our lives, like family and personal time. But certainly fear of failure, I think that is always present. So we have to learn how to manage that now. And then with time, we will get better at it. So that's what I would say to my younger self. You're gonna be afraid, but do it anyway.
And I think I developed this weird technique to make myself feel better, as if I feared of a failure. I would tell myself, okay, well, what's the worst case scenario if I fail? And I thought, because I knew if I moved forward with the insurance model where the company I worked for, I would never attain that peace and happiness. So that just wasn't an option. So I told myself, okay, well, if I fail and I lose everything, because I had sunk a lot of my savings into opening this. So I thought, if I lose everything and this doesn't work, worst case scenario is we move into a camper and my family and I, we just like live a more outdoorsy life and have minimal living and live in an RV and travel. And I'm like, you know what? That's not that bad. And then I thought, yeah, it's okay. So,
That sounds really good, actually.
yeah, I just try to think of the worst case scenario. And then when it doesn't seem as bad as you, it just, you make it seem worse in your head until you verbalize it out loud.
Yeah. So, what motivates you to keep going?
I'd say two things. I've always had a burning desire to want to help people, like heal people. Like even when I was 3 years old, I was playing with a stethoscope and I was obsessed with my doctor toys. So I've always had that. The other thing is my two boys. I just want to show them that you don't need anyone, no one should ever make you feel like you have limitations. You can always exceed those, and you should never place them on yourself either. So I think with them seeing my growth, it's just setting a good example for them.
What would you say to the doctor who's on the fence about direct care? What would you say to them?
Whether you're meditating or whatever you're doing, just assess your current life. And if you feel like your current situation does make you feel happy and not burn out, and you come home feeling satisfied, and you then maybe you can go the rest of your career and feel okay with that. Like maybe that's all you need. As long as you come home feeling satisfied, then maybe that's all you need. But if deep down you just know there's something missing and you feel like you know you could grow more and just change the rest of your career, yeah, I think you just need to go and have a deep reflection. And if you feel like something's missing, then it probably is.
Go get it. Yep, go get them. Well, I really appreciate your insight, because it's hard. I'm not gonna lie, that direct care, doing something that is the opposite of what everyone else is doing, even opposing our training, this has been incredibly challenging, but it's been rewarding for me, and it sounds like it's very rewarding for you too, so I'm really happy to hear that.
Yeah, and if it helps, I don't know if sometimes people see someone like you or someone who's already done it and they think, oh, well, they probably have someone, they probably have so much help or this and that. For me, I have no one in my family owns a business. No one in my family is in the medical field. I have a ton of student debt. No one gave me money to do this. You know, I did just put it all on the line and eventually it pays off. As long as you know in your heart you're a good doctor. I mean, if you get terrible feedback from your patients all the time, I'd probably say don't go this route because it might not pay off. But if you know in your heart you're good at what you do, then yeah, it's gonna pay off in the future.
I like that. I didn't have any resources. I did have the support of my husband, so that's something that is unique because both of our parents are immigrants. We all came here in poverty, eventually became our middle class and kind of stayed there. But, you know, when you're middle class, coming from immigrant background, your mentality is still very much in poverty. It just looks a little bit differently. And so I didn't have these resources, which is why I try to put this kind of stuff together and I stay engaged on Facebook groups because all other professions have business coaches. Athletes have coaches. CEOs of huge corporations have business coaches. And I think it's about time physicians really understand the value of getting the help when you don't have it from your own family resources. And that's no fault of our own. It's just the cards we were dealt. And so being able to reach out to these higher resources is incredibly helpful and it can really push you to the next level. And that's something that I highly recommend for everyone to look at, to seek out our professional coaches who can mentor you and get you to move into that next level of your professional career.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. And I just started meeting with two other female podiatrists. We just meet every other week for about a half an hour and just come up, brainstorm, and we're all direct care. So that we've actually only had two sessions so far. So I'm really eager to see where it goes. But
those masterminds are incredible. It really pushes you when you feel down. So yeah.
Yeah, it's great.
Do you have any last advice, last words you would like the listeners to hear?
Always keep direct care in the back of your mind as an option. And then if you're a patient or someone who's seeking treatment, to stay open-minded that you might end up getting better care going to an office where they offer, like yours, where they offer multiple treatments that aren't covered by insurance plans anyways. So I think no matter who's listening, I think everyone can have something to gain by learning more about direct care.
I agree. Of course I agree. Here I am. Well, I appreciate you talking to me about your journey and certainly sharing all of your wisdom. How can people find you if they want to learn more?
My website, www.onthemovedoc.com. Not the one in Arizona, the one in Pennsylvania. I found out after I created the business name, there's one in Arizona.
Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for everything. I do appreciate it. It's nice to just chat and talk to other fellow direct care podiatrists. I think you have to stay hungry to learn because the second you decide that, I remember when I was younger, when I was a student in medical school, I thought, okay, I can't wait to graduate because once I'm done learning, I never want to read a book again. Like, I just want to be done. And then I learned, well, no, you have to always want to learn more. And you pretty much even reinvent the wheel like every 5 years because times keep changing and you need to be able to keep up with things. So if you don't have that hunger, then sometimes that is an issue. Because you can be stuck in your ways. But
yeah, that's really good advice, actually. I'm going to keep that.
Thank you so much for being here with me. If you enjoyed this episode and want to hear more, please like, share, and subscribe so more people like you can have access to another way of practicing medicine, the direct care way. Let's connect. Find my info in the show notes and send me your questions. It might be the topic for future episodes. And lastly, if you remember nothing else, remember this. Be the energy you want to attract. See you next time.